And now, the epic conclusion of Starless Night, Chapter 27, Sorting It Out. It creaked and groaned in protest, shockwaves and searing flames melting its hold on the cavern ceiling. Then it fell, like a great spear whistling along its thousand-foot descent. Helpless and horrified, those dark elves levitating nearby watched it fly past. Inside the domed chapel, the ceremony continued undisturbed. A female soldier, an elite guard of House Benray, but certainly no noble, rushed up to the central dais, screaming wildly. At first, Matron Benray and the others thought her caught up in the outrageous frenzy, an all-too-common sight in the out-of-control drow rituals. Gradually, they came to understand that this soldier was screaming cries of warning. Seven matron mothers turned suddenly suspicious gazes upon Matron Benray, and even her own daughters did not know what she was about. Then, the stalactite hit. Drizzt caught Catterbury in midair, then he, too, was flying. He rolled over as the two touched down, burying the young woman under him protectively. They were both screaming, but neither heard anything beyond the thunderous roar of the widening fireball. Drizzt's back warmed, and his cloak ignited in several places as the very edge of the firestorm rolled over him. Then it was done, as quickly as it had begun. Drizzt rolled off Catterbury, scrambled to get out of his burning cloak, and rushed to get to his still-down companion, fearing that she had been knocked unconscious, or worse, in the explosion. Catterbury opened a blue eye and flashed a wistful, mischievous smile. "I'm betting that the way is clear behind us," she smirked, and Drizzt nearly laughed aloud. He scooped her up in his arms and hugged her tightly, feeling in that instant as though they might actually be free once more. He thought of the times to come in Mithril Hall, times that would be spent beside Brunner and Regis and Gwenhiver, and, of course, Catterbury. Drizzt could not believe all that he had almost thrown away. He let Catterbury go for a moment and rushed back around the bend just to confirm that all those drow pursuing them were gone. "Hello," Catterbury whispered under her breath, looking down to a magnificent sword lying next to the fallen weapons master. Catterbury gingerly picked up the weapon, confused as to why an evil drow noble would wield a sword whose hilt was sculpted in the shape of a unicorn, the symbol of the goodly goddess Myliki. "What have you found?" Drizzt asked, returning calmly.
"I think that this one would suit yourself," Catterbury remarked, holding up the weapon to display the unusual pommel.
Drizzt stared at the sword curiously. He'd not noticed that hilt in his fight with Dantrag, though he certainly remembered that blade as the one that had so easily cut through the stone wall. "You keep it," he offered with a shrug. "I favor the scimitar, and if that is truly a weapon of Myliki, then she would be pleased to have it on the hip of Catterbury." Catterbury saluted Drizzt, smiled widely, and slipped the sword into her belt. She turned about, hearing Entreri's return, as Drizzt bent over Dantrag's body and quietly slipped the bracers off the dead drow's wrists.
"We cannot delay," the obviously flustered assassin snapped. "All of Mensa Baronson knows of us now, and 1,000 miles will not be enough ground between me and that wretched city."
For perhaps the first time, Drizzt found that he completely agreed with the assassin. Belted as it was on the hip of the human woman was not exactly what the sentient Khazad-Hia had in mind. The sword had heard much talk of Drizzt Duarden, and upon Dantrag's defeat, had altered the appearance of its magical pommel so as it might rest in the grasp of the legendary warrior. Drizzt had not taken the bait, but the sword that had rightfully earned the name Cutter could wait. The going was smooth, with no pursuit evident for the rest of that day, and long into the night. Finally, the group had no choice but to stop and rest. But it was a fitful and nervous time indeed. So it went for 3 days of running, putting the miles behind them. Drizzt kept the lead and kept the companions far from Blingdenstone, fearful of involving the Svirfnebli in any of this incredible and dangerous web. He could not understand why lizard-riding drow patrols had not overtaken them, could hardly believe that scores of dark elves were not crouched in corridors behind them, or on their flanks, waiting to spring an ambush. Thus,
Drizzt was not surprised to see a familiar, outrageous dark elf standing in the middle of the corridor, wide-brimmed hat in hand, waiting to greet him and his fleeing companions. Caterbury, still seething, still on her warrior's edge, brought Talmoril up immediately.
"You're not for running free this time,"
she muttered under her breath, remembering how the crafty Jarlaxle had eluded them after the fight in Mithril Hall. Entreri grabbed the arrow before Caterbury had bent the bow, and the young woman, seeing that Drizzt was making no move to go for his weapons, did not continue.
"Please, dear and beautiful woman," the mercenary said to her, "I have only come out to say farewell." His words grated on Caterbury's nerves, but at the same time, she could not deny that Jarlaxle had treated her with dignity, had not abused her when she had been his helpless prisoner.
"From my perspective, that would seem a strange thing," Drizzt remarked, taking care to keep his voice calm. He felt in the pouch for the onyx figurine, but took little comfort in its presence, knowing that if he found the need to summon Gwenhiver, they would likely all die. Both Drizzt and Entreri, understanding the methods of Bragan the Arth and the precautions of its elusive leader, knew that they were surrounded by skilled warriors and overwhelming numbers.
"Perhaps I was not so opposed to your escape, Drizzt Duodon, as you seem to think,"
Jarlaxle replied, and there was no doubt in anyone's mind that he had aimed that remark directly at Artemis Entreri. Entreri did not seem surprised by the claim. Everything had fallen neatly into place for the assassin. Caterbury's circlet and the locket that helped to locate Drizzt, the spider mask, Jarlaxle's references to the vulnerability of House Benray during the high ritual, even the panther figurine waiting for him to take it on Jarlaxle's desk. He did not know how purposeful and involved Jarlaxle had been in arranging things, but he certainly understood that the mercenary had anticipated what might come to pass.
"You betrayed your own people," the assassin said.
"My own people?" Jarlaxle balked. "Define the term, people."
Jarlaxle paused for a few moments, then laughed, hearing no answer to his request.
"I did not cooperate with the plans of one matron mother," he corrected.
"The first matron mother," Entreri put in.
"For now," the mercenary added with a wistful smile. "Not all of the drow at Menzoberranzan were so pleased by the alliance Benray had formed. Not even all of Matron Benray's own family."
"Triel,"
Entreri said, more to Drizzt than to the mercenary.
"Among others," said Jarlaxle.
"What are the two talking about?"
Caterbury whispered to Drizzt, who only shrugged, not understanding the larger picture.
"We are discussing the fate of Mithril Hall," Jarlaxle explained to her. "I commend your aim, dear and beautiful lady."
He swept into a graceful bow that, for some reason, made Caterbury more than a little uncomfortable. Jarlaxle looked to Drizzt.
"I would pay dearly for a glimpse of the expressions worn by those matron mothers inside the Benray Chapel when your lovely companion stalactite spear plunged through the roof."
Both Drizzt and Entreri turned to stare at Caterbury, who just shrugged and smiled innocently.
"You didn't kill many drow," Jarlaxle quickly added. "Only a handful in the chapel, and no more than 24 throughout your entire escape. House Benray will recover, though it may take a while to figure out how to extract your handiwork from their no longer perfect domed ceiling. House Benray will recover."
"But the Alliance," Drizzt remarked, beginning to understand why no drow other than Bragan the Arth had come into the tunnels in pursuit.
"Yes, the Alliance," Jarlaxle replied, offering no explanation. "In truth, the Alliance to go after Mithril Hall was dead the minute that Drizzt Duodon was taken captive. But the questions," Jarlaxle continued, "so many to be answered. That is why I have come out, of course."
The three companions looked to each other, not understanding what the mercenary might be hinting at.
"You have something that I must return," Jarlaxle explained, looking directly at Entreri.
He held out his empty hand. You will turn it over.
And if we don't?
Caterbury demanded fiercely. Jarlaxle laughed. The assassin immediately produced the spider mask. Of course, Jarlaxle would need to put it back in Sorcerer, else he would be implicated in the escape. Jarlaxle's eyes gleamed when he saw the item, the one piece left to put into his completed puzzle. He suspected that Triel Benray had watched Entreri and Caterbury's every step when they had gone into Sorcerer to pilfer the thing. Jarlaxle's actions in guiding the assassin to the mask, though, in precipitating the escape of Driz Duarden, were perfectly in line with the eldest Benray daughter's desires. He took faith that she would not betray him to her mother. If he could just get that mask back into Sorcerer, no difficult feat, before Grompf Benray realized that it was missing. Entreri looked to Drizzt, who had no answers, then tossed the mask to Jarlaxle. Almost as an afterthought, the mercenary reached up and took a ruby pendant off his neck. "It's not so effective against drowned nobles," he explained dryly, and threw it unexpectedly to Drizzt. Drizzt's hand snapped out, too soon, and the pendant, Regis's pendant, slapped against the ranger's forearm. Quick as could be, Drizzt snapped his hand back in, catching the thing before it had fallen half an inch.
"Dan Trag's bracers,"
Jarlaxle said with a laugh as he noticed the ranger's covered wrists.
"I had suspected as much of them. Fear not, for you will get used to them, Driz Duarden, and then how much more formidable you will be."
Drizzt said nothing, but didn't doubt the mercenary's words. Entreri, not yet free of his rivalry with Drizzt, eyed the ranger dangerously, not the least bit pleased.
"And so you have defeated Matron Benray's plans,"
Jarlaxle went on grandly, sweeping into another bow.
"And you, assassin, have earned your freedom. But look over your shoulders, daring friends, for the memories of Dark Elves are long, and the methods of Dark Elves are devious."
There came an explosion, a blast of orange smoke, and when it cleared, Jarlaxle was gone.
"And good riddance to ya," Caterbury muttered.
"As I will say to you when we part company on the surface,"
Entreri promised grimly.
"Only because Caterbury gave you her word,"
Drizzt replied, his tone equally grave. He and Entreri locked uncompromising stares, looks of pure hatred, and Caterbury, standing between them, felt uncomfortable indeed. With the immediate threat of Menzoberranzan apparently behind them, it seemed as though the old enemies had become enemies again. Epilogue. The companions did not go back to the cave beyond Dead Orc Pass. With Gwenhyver's guidance, they came into the tunnels far beneath Mithril Hall, and Entreri knew the way well enough from there to guide them back to the tunnels connecting to the lower mines. The assassin and the ranger parted company on the same ledge where they had once battled, under the same starry sky they had seen the night of their duel. Entreri walked off along the ledge, pausing a short distance away to turn and regard his hated rival.
"Long, too, is my own memory,"
he remarked, referring to Jarlaxle's parting words.
"And are my methods less devious than those of the drow?"
Drizzt did not bother to respond.
"Shorn, I'm cursing me own words,"
Caterbury whispered to Drizzt.
"I'd be liking nothing better than to put an arrow through that one's back."
Drizzt hooked his arm over the young woman's shoulder and led her back into the tunnels. He would not disagree that Caterbury's shot, if taken, would have made the world a better place. But he was not afraid of Artemis Entreri anymore. Entreri had a lot on his mind, Drizzt knew. The assassin hadn't liked what he had seen in Menzoberranzan, such a clear mirror to his own dark soul, and he would be long in recovering from his emotional trials, long in turning his thoughts back to a drow ranger so very far away. Less than an hour later, the two friends came upon the site of Wulfgar's death. They paused and stood before it a long while, silently, arm in arm. By the time they turned to leave, a score of armed and armored dwarves had appeared, blocking every exit with engines of war.
"Surrender, or be squished!"
came the cry, followed by howls of surprise when the two intruders were recognized. In rushed the dwarven soldiers, surrounding, mobbing the pair.
"Take them to the watch, Commander!" came a call,
and Drizzt and Catterby were shuffled off at a breakneck speed along the winding ways and through the formal entrances to the tunnels of Mithril Hall. A short distance from there, they found the aforementioned commander, and the two friends were as startled to see him in that position as Regis was to see them.
"The commander?"
was Catterby's first words as she looked again at her little friend. Regis bounded over and leaped into her arms, at the same time throwing an arm about Driz's neck.
"You're back!"
he cried repeatedly, his cherubic features beaming brightly.
"Commander?"
Catterby asked again, no less incredulous. Regis gave a little shrug.
"Somebody had to do it," he explained.
"And he's been doing it fine by me own eyes," said one dwarf.
The other bearded folk in the room promptly agreed, putting a blush on the halfling's deceivingly dimpled face. Regis gave a little shrug, then kissed Catterby so hard that he bruised her cheek. Brunner sat as if turned to stone, and the other dwarves in his audience hall, after giving their hearty welcomes to Catterby, wisely departed.
"I bring them back,"
the young woman began matter-of-factly when she and her father were alone, trying to sound as if nothing spectacular had occurred.
"And Shuron, your eyes should feast on the sights of Menzoberranzan."
Brunner winced, tears welled in his blue-gray eye.
"Damned fool girl,"
he uttered loudly, stealing Catterby's cavalier attitude. She'd known Brunner since her earliest recollections, but she wasn't sure if the dwarf was about to hug her or throttle her.
"Damned fool yourself,"
she responded with characteristic stubbornness. Brunner leaped forward and lifted his hand. He had never before hit his adopted daughter, but only managed to stop himself at the last moment now.
"Damned fool yourself,"
Catterby said again, as if daring Brunner to strike her.
"Sitting here wallowing in something that you cannot change, when them things that are needn't change and go merrily along their way."
Brunner turned away.
"Do you think I'm missing Wolfcar any less than yourself?"
Catterby went on, grabbing his shoulder, though she could not begin to turn the solid dwarf.
"Do you think Drizzt missing him less?"
"And he's a fool, too,"
Brunner roared, spinning about to eye her squarely. For just a fleeting instant, Catterby saw that old spark, that old fire burning in the dwarf's moist eye.
"And he'd be the first to agree with you,"
Catterby replied, and a smile widened on her fair face.
"And so are we all at times. But it's a friend's duty to help when we're being fools."
Brunner gave in, offered the hug that his dear daughter desperately needed.
"Aye, and Driz could never be asking for a better friend than Catterby,"
he admitted, burying his words in the young woman's neck, wet with an old dwarf's tears. Outside Mithril Hall, Drizzt Duarden sat upon a stone, heedless of the stinging wind heralding the onslaught of winter, basking in the dawn he thought he would never see.